Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. Maureen Boson and Connie Bush are forever connected to one another, but not in a way either would have ever imagined. Years after participating in a genetic study about their BRCA status, they later learned that their cancer risk was in fact wrong. Maureen, who was told that she was positive for the mutation and underwent preventive surgeries, was actually BRCA negative, while Connie was told she was negative and later in life had to worry about the fact that she was indeed positive. In this week's episode, we feature a conversation between the pair, who discussed the revelation that changed both of their lives.
Okay. So let's back up to earlier this year. Actually, even before then, you were told in the early 1990s that you were BRCA2 negative by Dr. Lynch. So you thought that for about 20 years. And then earlier this year, you decided to get retested, and you found out that you were BRCA2 positive. What was the immediate reaction you had or the initial thought that ran through your head when you found out the results were wrong?
Initially, I was very skeptical of the new results. My provider was not very familiar with the testing. And so my first reaction was, yeah, I think she's reading that wrong. Let me see the test. Let me see what it says. And so, she said, okay, certainly. And she showed me my Myriad report, and it was pretty clear. I was quite shocked, actually. I was expecting it to be negative, like my first test was from Dr. Lynch.
So what, it's been about 9 months, I believe, or 6 months since you found out. What have your emotions been like over the course of that time?
Well, it's been kind of a roller coaster, actually. Initially, when I found out, I was quite shocked, and I thought, I was going off of my memory. It was like, okay, I know Dr. Lynch told me I was BRCA2 negative. I have to dig out my paperwork that he gave me, and just reread the letter and just, reiterate in my head that I was remembering correctly because it was so long ago. So I dug out my paperwork, and it's exactly like I remembered. It said that I was negative. And so my first instinct was I have to try to contact Creighton and ask them some questions, about the study and how it could be possible that my original test was incorrect.
And so you did contact Creighton. How did you expect them to react when you first reached out to them?
Well, I guess they reacted sort of like I expected. The first thing was, okay, first we need to have you sign a consent before we can talk to you about any of this. So, I had to kind of go through the formality. It took me a few days to track down, the correct person. So I left several voicemails, probably 3-4 voicemails before someone contacted me back. And then, of course, I said, well, before we look into any of your situation, I'm going to need you to sign this release, which I understand, and then it still was several more days before I was in contact with Sarah Taylor. And so it seemed like it was kind of a, a long process to actually physically talk to somebody about the results. They were kind of didn't really apologize, didn't really give an explanation of, what could have happened other than, initially it was, being told, well, you were negative for the gene that we were testing you for, but maybe you were just unlucky and you have a different gene mutation than what we were looking at. Or, maybe you had a variant of unknown significance back then, and so you were told you were negative, and then later on found out that it's actually a pathogenic mutation. So they were kind of giving me, some kind of options, I guess, as to or you know trying to explain how the results could have been wrong. So initially, I kind of decided, okay, I trust that information, and you know they told me originally that they were going to be letting people know that were in the study. Dr. Lynch's studies that they need to seek retesting because the technology has changed so much. And they said they were going to be rolling it out by the end of summer. You know, they told me they didn't think there was a systemic flaw in their testing methods. There was a very low error rate, less than 1% error rate. You know, so they were kind of trying to, I suppose try to somewhat explain that, you know, the test could be wrong and that I should be satisfied with that as an answer.
Yeah. And just to clarify, and you and I are in the same situation here, explain to me how what Dr. Lynch told you in your meeting about the accuracy of your results when you originally found them out differed from the documentation you received.
Yeah, so I didn't meet one-on-one with Dr. Lynch. We just had telephone conversations, you know, several conversations over the time that I was being tested. You know, I remember it being a very long conversation. He asked me a lot of questions. I knew that he was going to be giving me my results, but he asked me what seemed like countless questions. And in my head, I remember thinking he wouldn't be asking me these questions unless I had this gene mutation. Because they were all, you know, asking, you know, kind of the psychology of what would I do with this information and, you know, how would it affect me going forward and, you know, those types of questions. So, you know, I was kind of shocked when he told me I was negative. But on the other hand, he reiterated that the gene mutation, you know, that they were looking for, they didn't find, and that I asked him, I said, well, can this possibly be incorrect? And he said, well, you're born with those genes. They're not going to change. So, you know, if you don't have a mutation now, you know, your genes won't change as you get older. So if you don't have the gene now, you won't have it in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that giving me the information he knew at that time, you know, in retrospect. I think he was giving me what he thought was correct information at that point.
So thinking back on that meeting, or receiving those test results, do you have any regrets from that time period? Do you wish you would have done anything different after that?
Not initially, I don't think, but, you know, looking back on it now, in the letter that followed the phone conversation from Dr. Lynch, it said that, you know, you were tested in two independent laboratories from the same blood sample, and they both agree, but, you know, this is research, and you should, you know, get an independent sample, you know, have it tested in a clinical laboratory outside of research. Well, when I got tested, there were not any, you know, there were none in the United States that I could just call up and say, hey, can you double check this for me? But, you know, as time went on, I certainly could have sought, you know, additional testing. I just didn't think I needed to. But now, you know, of course, looking back, I wish I had.
And again, this is the same for me as it is for you. I never had a physician who second-guessed those research results. Do you think that physicians need to be more educated or healthcare providers to be checking the accuracy of genetic test results?
Most definitely. You know, I went to a number of providers over the years, and every one of them, I talked about my history, you know, and how it was part of Dr. Lynch's research, you know, was tested for the BRCA gene, was negative. Not a single one of them asked me, you know, do you think that you trust those results? Do you think that you need to get retested? Not a single one. And I think that that's, the providers need to have more education so that they can give the best advice to their patients. And I think there's a lot of providers that just are not knowledgeable enough about genetics.
Yeah, sadly, I think you're right. So going back to over the course of this past year, you found out your test results were inaccurate, and then you reached out to Creighton and started communicating with them. And then it wasn't too long after that you saw my story and my experience and how similar it was to yours. What initially went through your head, and how did that make you feel?
When I came across your video and I watched it, I know my mouth just dropped open, and I thought, oh my gosh, there is someone else just like me. My first thought when I found out I had wrong results from Creighton, I thought, okay, isolated error, it's a mistake, I can accept that. It happens, I understand. But then to be told from Creighton that they didn't think there was a problem with their, with their testing methods, and then come across you, and you already had notified them at that point as well. I felt like I was being misled by Creighton at that point, so I was kind of angry. Didn't really know how to go forward at that point. I was thinking, okay, if there's two of us, maybe there's more than two of us. And I felt like if I was one of those people that were tested and got wrong results, I would want to know it. So I think, it was sort of my responsibility to try and get the information out to people.
And working together, one of the things that we both agreed on is that we feel compelled to find other people who could be impacted by this research study. Do you feel like you're gaining closure by doing that? Has that helped you through this journey?
I think it is helping me because it feels like the right thing to do. I'm always, I'm a healthcare worker, and I've always been a proponent for my patients. And so now when the tables are turned, it's kind of hard to deal with being on the other end of it, but I still feel like I have to be a proponent. So, even if, people decide that they need to get retested and there's not one other single error found, that would be wonderful, but at least those people would have some peace of mind as well.
Mm-hmm. And the next step for you in this journey is going through a preventative or prophylactic double mastectomy. How are you feeling about that upcoming surgery?
Of course, I'm nervous, a little bit nervous. I'm very content in my decision because I know that it's the best thing. If I can take my chance down to nearly zero of developing breast cancer, and I have the power to do that by having surgery, I think that's what I need to do. I know how devastating cancer is, any type of cancer, cancer treatment. It's not only hard on the patients, hard on the families. And so if I can avoid that by doing preventative mastectomies, I feel like that's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And what about BRCA 1 and 2 affect other parts of our body other than just our breasts? Are you undergoing any other preventative surgeries or surveillance with a provider?
Yes, I also have had hysterectomy, oophorectomy. Of course, I'm past childbearing age, so for me it's not quite as devastating as for a younger woman. But at least that takes my risk of developing ovarian cancer down to, zero as well. So I'm very satisfied with that decision as well.
Great. So other than having surgery, how have the new results impacted your life, both for the better and for the worse?
Well, for the better, of course, it's giving me the information I need to be able to give to my children so that they have the opportunity to get tested. It also is helping extended relatives, you know, ones that were originally a part of the study like I was. I've reached out to them, and there's a number of them that are also seeking retesting. And so, you know, it's going to impact them and their families as well. You know, it's helping, I think it's helping my patients, you know, as a mammographer. If patients have questions, I feel like I have, first-hand knowledge that I can give to them. And I think they appreciate that, you know, information is coming from a patient, too. I'm not just their caregiver. Mm-hmm. So that part of it is helping me to get past this process as well. But I know that I can still help help my patients as well in the future if they're struggling mm-hmm. with the same decisions.
So one of the things that you had mentioned that Dr. Lynch said was that our genes are not going to change. What we had then is what we have now, and that's what he was able to look at. But one thing that we do know is changing is genetic testing and what we're able to see when we look at our genes and what we know about our genes. What have you learned about genetic testing over the last year or last, you know, decade even, that you want other people to know?
I've learned a lot in the last few months, actually. You know, when I was first tested for the BRCA 2 gene, I was aware that there was BRCA 1, BRCA 2 genes, but I didn't really know what that meant. You know, I thought it was sort of like a solitary thing. Like there's, you know, they look at your genes and there's the single mutation that determines if you have BRCA 1 or BRCA 2, not really truly understanding it. And now, you know, as I'm going through this and kind of researching, I realize that there are thousands of BRCA mutations that we're aware of now, that when you and I originally got tested, there were just a few, you know, a handful of mutations that they knew about. And so I can't imagine what the next 10 or 15 years, you know, as far as what we can learn from our genes in order to help, you know, prevent disease, but also to cure disease.
Yeah, and I think going off of that, one thing that you had mentioned when we were together, you had used an analogy of the way that we used to be able to see the Earth versus the tools that we have now. You can see all, you know, down to the individual. Can you explain that? Because I thought it was really good for describing the change just in genetic testing.
Yeah, and I mean, if you go back to, you know, in the 90s, you know, there was satellites, you know, of course, orbiting the Earth, and we would see these pictures, you know, satellite pictures on TV, and it would be a picture of the Earth, and you could pick out North America, and you could pick out South America, and you thought that was remarkable, you know, the technology at that point, how remarkable that was, that we could be miles above the Earth and be able to see, you know, the Earth with that great clarity. Now, fast forward to today, and those same satellites, you're able to zoom in to your house, and if you're standing in your yard, you can wave, and the satellite can see you. You know, I mean, that's the night and day difference between the technology when we were tested to the technology now that's available. The mm-hmm. information is astronomical in comparison to what the information they had at the time we were tested.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy, and I would just echo that. What I've learned is that genetics and genetic testing, it's not black and white. That's very gray, and there's still a lot we don't know and that we will hopefully learn by just understanding genetic testing limitations.
But I feel like, too, even at the point when Dr. Lynch gave us our results, he couldn't fathom the information that we would have today, mm-hmm. you know, at that point. And I feel like, you know, I was given corrective information at that point, but I was not kept up to date as the information changed. You know, I wasn't getting software updates. mm-hmm. And I think that's where kind of Crichton dropped the ball a little bit. is that mm-hmm. when they came across this information, you know, they were contacting me after I had my original test. I think the last time I participated in another study with him was in 2004. So it had been a number of years. You know, I continued to participate in Dr. Lynch's studies up to that point. So at that point, they should have known more than they did in 96, but I was not given any more additional information.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I think that we both acknowledge that Dr. Lynch was a pioneer in the genetics industry at the time, and he was trying to help us, and he made great advancements. And you're right, he probably couldn't have even imagined the limitations that his research had, but there is some accountability to make sure people are notified now that we know that there are limitations.
Right, right, exactly.
What's your advice to women or men who are going through genetic testing?
You know, they have to be their own, sometimes have to be their own best advocates, you know, because if their provider isn't as educated as you would want them to be, you know, patients are relying on their physicians for information, and if they don't have the most accurate, up-to-date information, those patients are at a definite disadvantage. So, you know, if you're a high-risk person, you know, you have cancer, any type of cancer really in your family, multiple family members, and you go to your provider and they say, no, I don't think it's genetic, you might want to just do a little more research, you know. And now with the testing being so inexpensive compared to what it was, you know, even several years ago, if those patients, you know, are not satisfied with that, they might want to seek testing on their own.
Yep, I completely agree. We can't be afraid to ask questions or be called crazy. We have to stand up ourselves because no one can do it better than us.
Right.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.